Welcome to the Journey of Wholeness podcast. We are a group of passionate individuals who are coaches and mentors here to help inspire, guide, and support you on your journey of wholeness. We know that the journey of wholeness is a lifelong pursuit, and we are thrilled to join you in your journey. We are passionate about sharing our life lessons, wisdom, and knowledge to help you to transform your life. We focus on teaching principles of truth, supporting you in applying those truths, and helping you to live a life full of joy.
Today, for a special guest, we have Cedric Reeves. And just a little background about how we come to know Cedric. Janice, a member of the Journey of Wholeness team, took his class. You can find it at attachmentrepair.com. And she told me, Amy, the story of this class and what it meant to her. And I took the class and was enthralled with it and saw a lot of beauty come into my life because of its experience. And I've been telling everyone I know since then that this is a great opportunity. So today we have Cedric. He's got a lot of great knowledge and study and personal experience that we hope to draw from as we hear his story. So we better share who's here with us today. We've got Amy Choate here, and then Janice Adair, also with the Journey of Wholeness team, and then Cedric Reeves here as our special guest. Now, I've shared a little bit about you, Cedric, just the teeniest little bit. I'd love to jump right in with your story. Like, what brings you to where you're at today and the work you're doing? Sure. Tell us so we can get to know you.
Sure. So my name's Cedric. It's kind of been a long path to getting here. Early on, I was always inquisitive, kind of wanting answers. But then I also think early on, and here we're talking childhood, like, you know, adolescence, there was also kind of suffering and dissatisfaction. And then like I was saying earlier, I'm also kind of more the active type. I'm, you know, kind of willing to work, energetic, et cetera. So there was this kind of motivation to figure life out. And so I remember, this is like when I was 17 years old, my mom and I had some fight, and she had been in psychotherapy, and she's like, oh, you should come to psychotherapy. Or so, like, she and I went to psychotherapy, and I'm like, oh, finally I'll get to present, like, how, I don't know, how upset I am, how mistreated I am, blah, 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 to the therapist. And so, whatever, we did this session, and he said, oh, you know, I think you would really benefit from continuing with psychotherapy yourself. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, this would be great. So I started with psychotherapy, got really obsessive about psychotherapy, like I've often been about most of my interests in life. So yeah, really obsessed with psychotherapy. That lasted for like 7 years with the same psychotherapist. You know, it's like doing all this journaling, reading all these books. And then incidentally, then I went on to college. I studied business. I come from a business family. And so then I graduated college, and I actually moved to Santiago, Chile, in South America. And then I started working in business as what I thought was business. In retrospect, it was just admin, which I've always been terrible at. But regardless, I'm like, oh, this sucks. Like, I hate this. I'm going to go back to school and become a psychotherapist. I don't want to do business. And so I went back and got a second undergraduate degree in psychology. And then in the course of that, I took a class, like an academic class in the psychology department, taught by a PhD psychologist, who was on meditation. So it was an academic class on meditation. It really blew me away. And just for context, the person who taught, the teacher was Edward Taub, who was both kind of a serious researcher and also one of the early TM guys. So like, you know, he was, you know, I think, you know, personally acquainted with Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, et cetera. Anyhow, so I took the class and it completely blew me away. I was like, oh my God, like within the first week, I'm like, oh, this is what I'm going to do with my life. This is so amazing. You know, psychotherapy is crap. It doesn't work well. This is like so much better. You can do it on your own. And then also again, kind of being a little inclined around business, I'm like, this is like, I can do this for free. Psychotherapy I have to keep paying for. So I got really interested in meditation.
Do you mind taking a moment to expound on what it was specifically about the meditation that you were like, wow, right? Like, what was it that stood it apart from psychotherapy?
Sure. I like that question. I think, you know, just the immediacy of, you know, like within the first week, I'd had like experiences of definitely some sort of absorption states, you know, maybe like jhanas or something like that. And I like felt so different and so much better. And I remember saying to myself, like, an hour of this is like years of psychotherapy. Now, that was like kind of very naive, regardless. And then I also specifically remember, and this is kind of going into some detail, but I think it's interesting. You know, in Buddhism, they talk about no self and like no soul, which that's kind of a really big, long conversation. But then I remember like feeling so radically different after some, and here we're talking first week of meditations, feeling so radically different after meditating that I'm like, oh wow, like they're like, if I feel this different after just doing this little hour-long intervention, like maybe there is not a self, maybe there is no soul, maybe there is, you know, nothing abiding inside of me that remains the same. And so that was also pretty impactful. So that's what comes up when you ask a question. Yeah. So I got really interested in meditation. I ended up, because I was going to focus on meditation, I mean, initially I planned on, you know, becoming a monk, but that I had like student loans. I wanted to pay those off before ordaining. So then I just did the undergrad. I didn't go back to graduate school at that point. And so I kind of got involved with life, kind of got a little bit distracted as well. I didn't have a meditation teacher. I was trying to pay off all these debts. So it was kind of like a little bit of a disoriented period for a few years. And I ended up moving to Miami. I got a girlfriend. That relationship ended up becoming very serious. We're still together today. Let's see what else. And so, you know, the plans of ordaining fell off, but then I ended up starting another business, a coin business, and I became a precious metals coin dealer and then jewelry dealer. And I started a business with two friends, and it ended up kind of turning into a pretty big business, the jewelry end of it. And what to say about that? But anyhow, so I was really kind of overworking, getting really stressed, and I got to a point where like my life was completely miserable. But I had had these really deep experiences. I mean, I'd kept meditating, but I wasn't meditating enough to really kind of manage my mental health. So my mental health really went into the ditch. I'm like, okay, like this is absolutely horrible. Like I'm going to kill myself or I'm going to get really serious about meditation again. So this is about, and I think 2011. So 2011, I like really rededicated myself to meditation. I meditated about it for the next really whatever, 10 or more years. I meditated for about an hour and a half a day, for many, many years. Every other month I'd do like a 5 to 10 day retreat. So it was like lots of retreat. And then things really got better. And then this business that I started with my friends, that lasted for I think 7 years. So then in 2017, we wrapped that business up. And it actually failed. The business failed, which was a blessing because I was extremely tired of it. And so then I'm like, okay, well, I'm gonna really follow my passions. I'm gonna become a meditation teacher. So I did some meditation teacher trainings. And then I started teaching meditation. So I started teaching meditation for my work at the beginning of, I think, 2019. Yeah, 2019. And so, okay, cool. That was going well enough. But then over the course of 2019, also kind of like I felt my like mental health kind of deteriorate again. And that was very troubling because, you know, I'd had this intervention with just lots and lots of meditation that had helped a lot for many years. So I found it very troubling to not have that refuge. And anyway, so I just like kept kind of, you know, it is if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So I just like kept banging away at it with meditation. And I went off and I did this retreat, incidentally, at the Rhode Island Zen Center, I think it's called. It's a Kwan Oom Zen Center. So I got there. It was going to be like a 3-week retreat, I think, but I only lasted like 3 days. I like quit sleeping. I was like really on edge. I really did not feel well. So I left the retreat. That was the first retreat I've ever left early. So then I got off the retreat and then very shortly. And so this was in late December. This was December. And then I think actually on the 1st of January, 2020, I talked to a friend of mine named Evan, and he was telling me about attachment theory and ideal parent figure protocol. So this is like kind of like an attachment repair modality developed by Dan Brown and David Elliott. And that really resonated, like his descriptions of insecure attachment resonated with me personally. I'm like, there was kind of some recognition. Then there was also, again, you have to understand that I was like, you know, kind of like a meditation snob, but like, I was like, oh, I'm not interested. It's like, psychotherapy, Western psychology. Oh, I know better. anyway, but then I was more open. I was more open because this was a serious meditator that I was talking to. The modality was a meditation modality, and the person that had developed it was also a well-respected meditation teacher in a Tibetan lineage, Dan Brown. So, you know, like, you know, that couldn't be ignored. So I was like, okay, cool. And then, you know, it took me like, I don't know, a month or two to kind of get serious about it. But then I think I kind of procrastinated on listening to the first ideal parent figure protocol meditation. But then when I finally did it, like, wow. And then this friend of mine, Evan, he and I, like, he kind of tutored me like for hours and hours and hours on this because he had been studying it and working on his own attachment conditioning. And I think over like the next, I don't know, like 6 months, we spent like 5 hours a week where he just tutored me on all this. So I was like really obsessed. I got obsessed with this. I did a training online on ideal parent figure protocol. I took a bunch of courses by George Haas on attachment theory, and George Haas started facilitating me in ideal parent figure protocol, started doing these meditations like all the time. And basically for, I don't know, 8 or 9 months of 2020, and I wasn't working outside of just a few meditation students, I just did that all the time, just studied attachment theory, did ideal parent figure protocol, etc. And then also along the way, I got interested in schema therapy. I ended up doing 2-year-long trainings in that. And I also got interested in coherence therapy. And then, you know, I saw a lot of differences. You know, things really improved. And I do think that before I started with this work, even though I was like this kind of dedicated meditator, and there had been a lot of positive changes from the meditation, I do think I still had insecure attachment even after, you know, like probably like 7,000 hours of meditation and nearly a year on retreat. I still think I had insecure attachment, but this work, I'm pretty certain, brought about secure attachment. I know that I've taken the adult attachment interview twice since starting this work, and both have been secure scores. So anyway, so, you know, like, you know how it is. It's like, I developed this expertise by doing my own work. So I'm like, well, this seems quite interesting to a lot of people. So I'm like, okay. So this friend of mine and I, we put up a website, attachmentrepair.com. We started, and this was the very end of 2020. So we started out with like a 1-day retreat, and then it's kind of built as like, we're going to do ideal parent figure protocol. I'm going to teach ideal parent figure protocol, and then we're going to do ideal parent figure protocol on the 5 core attachment schemas. And this is drawing from schema therapy. So we're going to do IPF on mistrust and abuse, abandonment and stability, emotional deprivation, shame and defectiveness, and social isolation. So we did that. That went well. Then like about a month or so later, I put together like an 8-week course where it was mostly based on ideal parent figure protocol and schema therapy. And then kind of then, you know, like I was kind of like teaching mostly this attachment repair stuff. Anyway, so those are the things that come up right now. Any like follow-up questions? I'm really open to take any questions.
Sure. Let's hear just a little bit of the family life stuff. Like you have the woman that you met and dated and you've been with for a long time. How long have you been together?
We've been together 15 years. Yeah, 15 years.
Fantastic. Do you guys have children together?
No, we don't. We don't. No children. Sadly, no, okay. no kids. No.
And where are you located? Like,
we're in upstate New York, New York, in a town called Little Falls. It's not very far from Utica. Yep.
Okay. And then you obviously have like an intense passion for studying all things relating to the mind and relationships and meditation. Are there any other hobbies that just light you up?
I like foreign languages. I currently have long COVID, but before long COVID, I really enjoyed lifting weights at the gym. I'm pretty interested in health and nutrition. That's it. Yep. Pretty much all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thanks for letting us just get to know you a little bit more on the personal level also. I was thinking about it in terms of, you know, attachment styles and whatnot. When I went through the 8-week course, a lot of your information was just like spot on and made it more clear for me how that showed up in my adult life. Yeah. So I was like, I totally avoidant. And I think about life through attachment theory in way more than probably most people do. So I just saw more clearly how the avoidance stuff showed up and how actually I think I've done some healing of that and learned certain skills to help me be a little better. Like at some point in my life, I learned nonviolent communication from Marshall Rosenberg, right? And so even though I was avoidant, I saw how clearly it was, how important to attune to your needs and your feelings, right? And have a way to figure out how to meet those. And I think it made a huge difference in my ability to be less avoidant in my interactions and my relationships. So where I'm going with that question is maybe you could tell also a little bit of what you saw in your own attachment as you came to understand attachment theory. What was your attachment style? How did it show up in your life? And then take us on the journey, like as you started doing the work of the attachment repair and the ideal parent figure all of that, what shifts did you start to see?
I'll write that down. Shift. Okay. All right, let's see here. So my own attachment style. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm still not really let's say 25 years ago, had I taken the adult attachment interview, what would my attachment style have been? I don't think it would have actually been disorganized or fearful. I think it probably would have been preoccupied, but there were definitely strong avoidant traits as well. So I think it would have been angry, preoccupied, specifically with kind of like not scorable levels of dismissal showing up on the adult attachment interview. Now showing up, I think the avoidant dismissive traits would show up in my actual life. And then just, you know, I was like not, you know, I think a lot of deep sense of like shame and, you know, like not being good enough. And also I definitely had the mistrust and abuse schema, you know, thinking that people would take advantage of me and, you know, I, and something I always say in my courses is that if you have that schema, it really pays to work on that early on, because that kind of ruins everything. That just makes life so much harder. It makes healing harder, because, you know, like healing, I think to some extent, or actually an appreciable extent, hinges on trusting someone else. It, in the case of the work that I do, it hinges on trusting the perfect nurturers. So you have to like actually trust that they're not going to abuse you. So you need to work through all your expectations around abuse. Anyhow, kind of being a little tangential. So getting back to like my own attachment style. So yeah, probably angry, preoccupied with dismissing features. And I also think some secure features as well, no doubt. What else? Definitely, you know, abandonment fear. The sense of, like I said, something being wrong with me. Definitely that deep sense of something being wrong with me. And being very frantic to fix it. Oh my God. So frantic to fix it. Ugh, cringe. Also kind of like some impaired kind of sense of autonomy, like sense that I couldn't follow through on the things that I wanted, especially like an impaired sense of autonomy. An impaired sense of agency around others, not being able to have the impact on others that I wanted, not being able to really, in a sense, have healthy relationships. That was there. And then what else? Also kind of a preoccupation with the mental states of others, you know, kind of like self-sacrifice, self-subjugation, sense of guilt, my own kind of, like, I guess attachment history kind of made me feel that like I was like bad or a villain, because some unfortunate dynamics from my childhood made me kind of feel that way, which is very difficult to kind of, that's difficult conditioning to work with. Anyhow, so that's a little bit about where I was, and then some changes. So, you know, like, I think the more kind of practical and, well, not practical, but the more kind of like of an example that I can make the changes, the better. Like, you know, in the past, like one of the things I would notice doing this work is like, I'd be over at somebody's house. And this is just like very kind of weird, but like, you know, for example, I'd be, let's say in the bathroom at somebody else's house. And before this, I would be like, so kind of angsty about like, I don't want, like, I need to be very mindful of using these people's resources. You know, like, you know, like I need to be very mindful with all their stuff and like, oh, there's a washcloth here and oh, I'll use this, but you know, oh, such and such. And like, I just noticed that doing this work, I was like, just kind of at ease with that. Also like calling somebody up or not calling them up became no big deal. Whereas it was this really highly involved mental and emotional thing for me to do previous to this. It's like, you know, how are they responding? And then like, am I calling too much? And then is this conversation lasting too long? Whereas after doing all this work, I was just kind of at ease with all that. It wasn't emotionally or mentally taxing to give somebody a phone call or ask them to go do something, et cetera. Also, my ADHD did get a lot better as a result of doing all this attachment work. Since long COVID, that's out the window, sadly. But but what else? What other changes? You know, also like, yeah. So something else that changes, like, you know, this is kind of a little cheesy sounding, but like more love, you know, I feel more love towards others. Definitely more kind of understanding and compassion, like kind of there's a better understanding for how people's conditioning, which they do not choose, has this impact on them. And I mean, on some level, we are necessarily responsible for our conditioning. We're responsible for it, even though we're responsible to fix it. And if we don't fix it and we act out our bad conditioning, there sadly negative consequences. But at the same time, I think there's a better appreciation of like seeing how it's all kind of somewhat impersonal, that it's just kind of luck of the draw. You get certain conditioning and it plays out in your life and can be extremely damaging. And so just seeing that and having a kind of, and this is an overstatement, but something along the lines of unconditional understanding and compassion is more accessible to me than it used to be. What else? What other changes? A little bit more confidence. There's more confidence. More patience. That's what's coming up right now. Yep.
Those are beautiful. And I can tell as you describe, you know, the before with the attachment, that you really have a deep understanding of the attachment styles and all the different ways they can show up. And you know, I saw myself in a lot of what you described, you know, I'd be like, oh, not so much that one, but ooh, that one. And I think that's part of the strength that you bring into the class too, is really helping people kind of tease out those ways, those modes, those schemas and whatnot that are showing up for them. So just when I do these meditations, because I'll go back and I'll take the recording from our the class that I joined you in, and I'll do it. And even when I was in the 8-week course, it probably takes 30 minutes most of the time to do most of the meditations that you do, right? Yep. And you hit on this earlier. In those 30 minutes, I was like, that's better than an hour of talk therapy anytime.
I
notice shifts. I notice a resolution in like my paradigm kind of shifts in noticeable ways. I interact differently for the next little while. Anxiety noticeably decreases. Anyways, that's been my experience. So I totally agree when you had that moment where you were like, meditation is the way, and there's so much more change than, you know, seven years of psychotherapy. But I'd love to touch on the research, because you've done a lot of the study, and you've done it. What you just shared with us was your own personal application, but there's research out there that shares, you know, like Dan Brown's ideal parent figure, like the difference that it actually makes statistically, right? So can you share a little bit with us about the evidence of this work?
Sure. Okay. So we can kind of go over ideal parent figure protocol, schema therapy, and coherence therapy, and then the kind of clinical results that they get. And also, I just want to really be clear that this is not an accurate representation. This is just kind of what I remember, just off the cuff. So, okay, starting. So, and then let me, before we go into this, let me say that, you know, obviously this modality, like attachment repair meditation that I do, is kind of a mix of those three modalities mostly. And then also actually drawing from metacognitive therapy. Anyhow, moving on. So in Dan Brown, as far as I know, he only did one pilot study with 12 subjects. And in his pilot study, so what they did was, the intervention was one-on-one ideal parent figure protocol facilitation with therapist and client every week. And then the client was also to listen to a ideal parent figure protocol meditation or the recording of the one that they did in the session every day. Okay, good. So that was the intervention. For people with dismissing attachment, in Dan's pilot study, it took 1 year, like 50 sessions, to move from dismissing, avoidant, insecure attachment to earned secure attachment. I also should say that earned secure attachment probably would not, well, I think generally was not prototypically secure. It would be probably in the case of somebody with dismissing, so secure with a few dismissing or avoidant features. And then, you know, once you have earned secure attachment with just some more minor insecure features, there's still sadly a lot more work to be done. But I think at that point, you know, the suffering of your life has been hugely diminished. If you can go from insecure to secure. Okay, great. Then next were the clients with preoccupied attachment. People with preoccupied attachment, in his study, it took about, I think, 80 to maybe 120 sessions. So basically a year of one-on-one work plus listening to the recordings to go from preoccupied to earned secure attachment. Again, probably most cases with preoccupied features. And then there's the issue of disorganized attachment. And I can also kind of go back and maybe right hereafter, I'll define those attachment styles. So people with disorganized, or really a better name would be fearful attachment. Those people took 3 years of one-on-one facilitation, ideal parent figure protocol, and listening to the recordings at home to move from disorganized to secure. Yep. So then that's the ideal parent figure protocol, like, data that I'm aware of. And it's only a pilot study. I can keep going, but let me turn it over to you, Amy. How's that landing? Any follow-up questions?
Yeah, that's actually what I remember. And I remember hearing that and thinking how hopeful that is.
Yeah.
Right? Like, meditation being more affordable than an hour every week, and the safety of your home, you don't have to travel out, find parking. And anyways, there was a lot about that just really struck me, that there is the personal work that can be done, hopefully with supportive person, you know, kind of helping to inform that. But that was really helpful to me.
I'll kind of interject, this is a little out of place, but like, I mean, part of the whole idea behind attachment, attachmentrepair.com, is that we want to make this work available to people, like, very, very broadly. And, you know, incidentally, like, all the courses are donation based. Nobody's ever turned away for not having the money to do the course. And now there's no shortcuts around the work, as far as I know. So people have to invest all the work. And I tell people it is a lot of work. But much of the idea behind attachment repair was like, OK, how can we, like, get this out there, deliver it such that anybody can do this work, even if you can't afford psychotherapy? And then also, I want to be clear, I think psychotherapy is great, and it's preferable that people do. I mean, it's preferable that they get facilitated by somebody, like, by a schema therapist, by someone's doing ideal parent figure protocol, or even just therapy generally. There are a lot of good modalities out there, but this is available to any and everybody. Anyhow, cool. So going back, it's a little bit complicated. So let me also just mention that we don't yet have any studies on this kind of mixed modality that I do, but in about 2 weeks, we will have our first pilot study done. And I'm happy to share the information with y'all. So I'm running the kind of attachment theory and repair course right now. We just finished week 7, I think, like, I don't know, like 60 or 70 people that took the course going in before the course actually managed to do the intake assessment, where we assess schemas. We also drew from the ECR, the experience of close relationships assessment, and a bunch of other stuff, assessments on depression, anxiety, et cetera. And so we'll see how effective this has been just over 8 weeks. So we'll see. And I'll let y'all know.
Exciting.
Oh yeah, totally. I find it exciting. Yeah. But regardless, at this very juncture, we don't have any evidence to support the modality, because it's a kind of a thrown together modality. But, you know, I can reference the research that the modalities have that I draw from. So now moving on to schema therapy. Now, I don't have the evidence memorized there as well, but generally speaking, like, schema therapy is a modality that was designed to treat first borderline personality disorder specifically, and then personality disorders generally, and then actually just people's, I would say, just psychological maladies generally. And it's a very effective modality. And then my understanding, and like, please just take it with a grain of salt. I don't know all the details, but that it generally takes about 3 years of maybe one or two sessions of schema therapy plus a week plus maybe a group session of schema therapy to get somebody to go from a person out from having a personality disorder to no longer meeting the criteria for a personality disorder. And so now let me kind of explain why this is actually, why I view this as relevant. Okay, so if you get a good schema therapist, they will do a lot of imagery scripting, and imagery scripting is quite similar to ideal parent figure protocol. It's imaginal work where you kind of go back and you have these emotionally corrective experiences. That's one. They'll also do other, experiential work, like chair work, which is basically parts work, you know, pretty overlapping with IFS. So that's how I view that as well. Oh, then the other piece, and this is important to kind of understand, I generally assume that, and I think the research backs this up to some extent, but not as cleanly as I would like, but I generally think that a personality disorder is going to correlate with, or is going to be really caused by either disorganized attachment, in I think most cases, or rather in many cases, but then generally some other insecure attachment style, like preoccupied or dismissing. So I think that they're kind of like, they're actually working on the same thing, although they language it differently. And then many of the modalities and interventions between ideal parent figure protocol and schema therapy are appreciably overlapping. So that's why I bring that up. And then also that kind of taking 3 years to cure the personality disorder and taking 3 years to cure disorganized attachment, you know, I think that there's a parallel there that's interesting. So, okay, great. And then moving on to coherence therapy, the other modality that I draw from, I know that it has, its effectiveness is verified, but I'm just not very familiar with the results. So maybe I'll just leave it at that. And then one other thing that I tell my clients, because, you know, some people, when they hear, oh, wow, a year or two or three, they're like, great. And then others like, oh, God, cringe. I'm so desperate to get better. I can't wait that long. I'm completely on the edge as it is. And what I tell them is, like, if you do this work, 10 out of every 12 months, there will be noticeable improvements. And then these improvements consolidate. So you can really expect improvements, and that, you know, as long as you don't whatever get sick or whatever it is, or have some sort of major trauma, every month gets better, and you should focus on that to stay motivated. Okay, that's kind of my spiel on effectiveness of the modality.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing. I know Janice, yesterday we were talking, and I'd love to give her a chance just to share her personal experience too, like what she noticed.
Oh, God, that'd be really, I always love to hear that. Janice, tell us about it.
Yeah, so I actually came across your class on LinkedIn a few years ago, and I was more intrigued just by the meditation retreat, knew a little bit about attachment, but it was interesting. I did take the 8-week course as well after the day retreat. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I think for me, like learning about the four different attachment styles, and as you talked about preoccupied, I'm like, oh my gosh, you are describing my life right now. And things just began to click for me, even just that mindset of realizing like other people don't view the world this way. Like I just assumed everybody right. saw the world the way uh-huh. that I did. And so to uh-huh. say like, oh, wait a minute, like people see it this way and that way, like it just was mind blowing to me. And I think, you know, I had done therapy before, and I think just validating as well, like I feel like I had more change and more understanding, like uh-huh. as I dive deep within myself and did that inner work more than just like talking yeah. it out. I did have a follow-up question with you just uh-huh, about sure. the ideal parent figure, because I feel like that was where a lot of growth and change came uh-huh. for me, being able to say like, oh, someone is able to like know what I need in this moment that I didn't get like as a child. And you had mentioned just the struggle of like being able to trust someone else to do this change. So I think, I guess the question that comes for me, like with a perfect nurturer, how long did it take you to like form that perfect nurturer and to be able to trust, just, you know, imagery, like how long did that take? And your perfect nurturers, are they still changing or are they a solid base that they are constant? And like when you, and maybe even for our listeners, like they're like, what is a perfect nurturer? You know, they might be like, I don't know what you're talking about here. Yeah, so, yeah. So just a couple questions.
Great questions. Okay. So yeah, just starting with like, okay. Perfect nurturer. So perfect nurturer is just my vocabulary. It's they're almost entirely overlapping with the concept of ideal parents. I just prefer the language perfect nurturers. So they're just imaginal parent figures. That's it. And they're the ones that kind of reparent you and actually, and this is all imaginal work, just repair your early attachment conditioning. Very good. So, and you're asking about like the, you know, if they changed over time. So in a certain way, I've not been very particular. I've not made any effort to make the perfect nurturers very constant or clear in my mind. And what I say, so let me back up and say that this is imagery work or visualization meditation, but it's kind of unfortunate that that's the name that we have for it, because it's more like, it should be called more like imaginal felt sense work, because it's all about the felt sense. And then we just instrumentally use, this is the way I view it, we instrumentally use the images to maintain and deepen the felt sense of being attuned with, of being kept safe, of being soothed, of being encouraged, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, then let's see here. I think there were a few points that I didn't speak to. Could you go back to the, go back to what I didn't speak to?
Yeah, I guess like your own personal journey, you'd mentioned the struggle of like learning to trust people again. Was there, did it take you time to be able to begin to trust these ideal parent figures?
It did. I'll start with kind of a general statement, then I'll go to my own personal experience. So the more experience of like actually like trauma, especially trauma at the hands of attachment figures or parents that people have, generally, I think the harder it is to do this practice, but also the more valuable the practice is. The poorer your attachment conditioning, the more you stand to benefit. And I always like to remind people with disorganized attachment, like, oh my God, this is so hard. Like, oh, I have all these. And then here we're kind of getting to speaking to your question. Oh, I'm getting all these like intrusive thoughts, like that are scary thoughts. And then what I really try to encourage those people to keep going, because like, wow, their lives can like massively improve, like huge. Anyhow, but yeah, so more to my experience. Yeah, I did have like, when early on, for I don't know, probably the first year and a half, I would still have kind of intrusive thoughts that in the meditation that provoked fear. And I would just call this, you know, these were just emotional memories of, I guess you could say abuse. And so, yeah, that would come up. And over time, that went away. And then now kind of following a different vein that you didn't explicitly ask about, but I think it might be interesting to people to have a sense for how you work through that kind of thing. So what I tell people is like, you let your perfect nurturers know the thing that's coming up. Like, oh yeah, like here I am with you. And then all of a sudden I think you're going to like, I expect that you're going to be threatening with me, or I expect that you'll sexually abuse me or something like that. And then you just want to let them know that. And they actually, the perfect nurturers always meet you exactly where you are. So it's like, oh, of course you'd be afraid of that. you have a good reason to expect that. Of course you expect that. This is an old emotional memory. We're not going to do that to you, but you know, and then they might say something like, but what is it that we need to do to kind of earn your trust and really show you that that this old negative pattern won't be relived with us? And it's just an iterative process. But I think that kind of starting with attunement and like, and it kind of, and now here drawing from coherence therapy, an actual validation and actually a what's called a taking the pro-symptom position, like, oh, of course you're expecting abuse. Like, duh, of course you're expecting this. There's nothing weird about that. Anybody with your background, anybody with your experiences would expect abuse. And so I think that that's kind of how you unravel it. And then just taking time. And and then I think it's just like, how the hell do you trick yourself into staying motivated to do all this work? Because it's a lot of work. Anyhow, that's what's coming up.
That's great. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, staying motivated, that's really a key. Like, I set a goal to meditate on this just twice a week, right?
Okay.
And I was like hitting once a week there for a while, and then I've weaned off again, and I'm like, okay, how do I get back into this? I need to. I found that most consistently, if I noticed anxiety and I had the time and space, that's when I would go into it. But like, just creating that. Do you have any tips for people as they learn this option and how to stay motivated with a routine practice?
Sure. Some things come up. One is, what really works best is, I used to say, and I think I'm like, I've changed this as of this week. I used to say, do this meditation every day or every other day, but I'm going to change. I think I'm going to tell people to do it every single day, but then adding this, if you miss one day, it is fine, but never, ever, best you can, miss 2 days in a row, because failing the habit, failing to follow through on the habit once is just like a little blip. And then, you know, like life happens, whatever. But then if you miss the meditation twice in a row, then you set a new routine, which now your routine as of 2 days is not doing the meditation. So that's actually what I'd start with. The next piece is, so let me just simply tell you what I found motivating was like, wow, it's basically either free or nearly free to do, right? Outside. So it's like extremely cost effective. Also, I think reflect on that. Reflect on, like, imagine what it would be like to have secure attachment, which actually, now that I'm thinking about that, we could even do a brief kind of guided visualization on what it would be like to have secure attachment. And then shall we do that here after a bit? Awesome.
Great. Yeah, let's have that be how we wrap up.
Okay, cool. So like really get a sense for what it would be like to have secure attachment. Also see clearly how having insecure attachment really sucks. Like see all the anxiety, see how you're missing out on a lot of life. Like to be clear, to have insecure attachment really does mean to miss out on life. It means that you can't connect well with others, that depending on the attachment style, you can't really go after what you want in life. You'll struggle with emotional self-regulation. You'll struggle with understanding your mind and the minds of others. So, you know, I think focus on the benefits. And then another thing, and this is kind of, I was reminded of this by you, Amy, you mentioned earlier, like kind of really feeling, like noticing how the meditation has an impact and then feeling into that. So I think kind of very generically, like notice, like, wow, I feel a lot better when I do the meditation. But then more specifically, this is like, if people can master this skill, this makes all the difference. Okay, it's notice what emotional memory reconsolidation feels like. Now, let me back up and define emotional memory reconsolidation. So, you know, there are memories, right? And in this work, we are not, We're not trying to brainwash ourselves. We're not reconsolidating what are called episodic memories. We are not trying to say, oh, this one time my dad abused me. Oh, that doesn't exist. No, we're not trying to do that. What we are trying to do is we are trying to reconsolidate semantic memories. What does that mean? A semantic memory means the way that life, like it's like this message as to what life means. And then Janice, earlier you were saying, it's like, I couldn't even believe that there was like a different way to be. Well, that's because this old attachment conditioning of ours, it's not actually, we don't objectify it. It's subject. It's like, it's not here. We're not looking at it. It's like here. It's like what we see life through. So anyway, that's what we're reconsolidating. So, and then let's give an example of it. It's like you start the meditation. And then let me just say that it takes many of these to really thoroughly reconsolidate these old memories. But let's start with the example of abandonment. So you really expect that the world is unstable. You can't count on anybody. They'll abandon you, etc. So you do one of these meditations. And then when there is the piece towards the end of the meditation where we're really working on having the emotionally corrective experience that actually, and this is important, that disconfirms your expectation that you will be abandoned, there's actually, it's really interesting, there is a feeling to it. You can actually feel when the emotional memory reconsolidation happens, because what will happen is you'll be like, wait, hold up, man, wait, what now? Like, wait, this, I expected this, but then this other thing is happening. And there's this kind of weird kind of cognitive dissonance and confusion. You're like, wow, I always expected to be abandoned. But like, geez, like right now, the perfect nurturers are just like, I know that they're right there. And I know that they're accepting of me. And I know that the care is totally consistent. And then this like, hold up now, there's something awry here. That's when actually this like triggers a kind of brain plasticity that reconfigures your view on life. And so now this is a very long-winded response to, you know, how to keep motivated. So if you can keep that in mind, oh yeah, there is emotional memory reconsolidation. And then if you can see how and feel how it really is making a difference, then your faith increases. Like, for example, based on what you were saying earlier, Amy, it seems like you've had this experience. Like you've had the experience of emotional memory reconsolidation doing these meditations. Now, okay, you might forget that this stuff works. You might forget about it. But I don't think anybody could convince you that it's not real or isn't effective. Like if I were to tell you, Amy, that stuff doesn't work. Yeah, you're wasting your time. And like, if I spent like an hour berating you about how this meditation is a waste of time, it doesn't work. At the end of the hour, you'd be like, well, look, man, like, I guess it might not work for you, but I know my own experience. Like I had an experience, things actually changed, and I can't get you to not have had your experience. So I think have these deep experiences of healing and change. Remember the benefits. Remember where you're moving. Remember your point A. Remember the point B that you're trying to get to. Remember that you have the bridge to get from point A to point B. And then also remember that it needs to also be kind of a little bit habitual. And so set up that habit and then do the work. And then I also think it's helpful to just to kind of pile on to this is like, go find a meditation buddy to meditate with daily. You can find multiple meditation friends to get on Zoom, listen to the meditations with. And then, you know, also get facilitated in one of these modalities, either this modality or something similar. So that's what I would say.
That's fantastic.
Great.
Thank you for the perspective. And, you know, just from a personal standpoint, the tool, the perspective that I need to recommit to that daily practice, which is amazing. That's a lot more than my two times a week that I was failing at. But you're right. The need to create that habit twice a week at ambiguous times isn't the same as creating a daily practice. So that's great.
You know, let me interject one other thing. And then this is also, I think, really motivating. So many types of meditation I mean, I think every meditation that you do has some small permanent effect, but then there are many types of meditations that seem that much of their effect is kind of very transient. It's worth it. It really helps. Like, you know, you do your 30 minutes of mindfulness a day. I think you like permanently improve your metacognitive skills, your ability to kind of feel into awareness, blah, 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 your emotional regulation skills. But also there's this kind of like lightness of being and ease that is pretty transient and that kind of wears off after a day or so, right? And I think it's good for us just to be aware of that. But, and then I do think that there are some small kind of more transient benefits to these attachment repair meditations that, you know, you'll feel a little bit calmer that day. But I actually believe that the primary impact of this kind of work is basically permanent. And, you know, once you've got insecure attachment, as long as you don't, you know, get in some sort of like really traumatic relationship or go through just really horrendous trauma, you will have secure attachment for the rest of your life, because the way that this emotional memory system of ours is very, very stable. And then let me just actually go a little bit further into depth about that. Like, I think at 20 years old, people's internal working model of attachment, which is effectively the same thing as their attachment conditioning, is the exact same as it was when they were 18 months of age. So it's very, very stable. And once you fix this, and here I'm repeating myself, but once you fix your attachment and you go from insecure to secure attachment, you can quit these practices. These are not lifelong practices. You just do them for a year, two, three, four, whatever, and then just move on. And, you know, I mean, I think having some sort of cultivation practice is good, but you don't need to keep this one going. So just get it done. Just bang it out.
That's a cool perspective.
Yeah.
So Cedric, here at the Journey of Wholeness, like a lot of what we're doing has to do with helping people come to this space of wholeness. And I'd just like to ask you as our guest speaker today, how do you perceive wholeness from the perspective of the work you do?
Well, so I guess, you know, to put it in a nutshell, like what is it that I'm trying to help people achieve? And that is like, I guess you can kind of put in the work in like two categories. Like one is like better relationships. And then the other kind of grouping is more like a clearer sense of self, a better sense of agency, and a greater ability to go after what you want. So basically just improved relationships and improved like agency, improved exploration skills. And then just for a bit more context on that, is that like kind of going back to this idea of the toddler with the parent, it's, you know, maybe ironically that the stronger, the more secure the secure base, the more kind of ambitious and fully formed the explorations away from it. So this work is really about creating a more secure internal working model of attachment. It's kind of almost like this like internal unconscious hallucination of being supported by others, greater ease with connecting, and then on that basis, a greater ability to explore. And so, and I don't think that that's all of life, connection and exploration, but I think it's much of life. And so that's how I would fit it into the journey to wholeness. Yep. And it was lacking in my case. So, yeah.
You hit on a couple of points that really resonate with kind of how we seek to help others. Like, We get a sense of security within ourselves. We can then project that to our relationship with others, right? Like, so I'm hearing that in the relationship component. And then even if we're secure with ourselves and have that inner sense, we're out exploring more boldly and confidently. So,
yeah.
And maybe in what you're saying, that security is that wholeness. It's the sense that you, even with something that might be labeled as like a disorder at some level, or you frequently refer to them as like just well, that makes sense that you would pull in that coping mechanism and for that response that you experienced, you know? So those things that we look at sometimes as just shameful coping mechanisms are just part of that protective layering. And to work beyond those, we reveal our wholeness that's beneath them. So it's kind of how I, taking what you're sharing and the work we do and kind of mixing together here. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Let's, awesome. Well, Cedric, you offered to do a meditation for us.
Sure.
I think that sounds beautiful and a beautiful way to end, but take a moment and tell us, kind of, you know, promote yourself. Where can people find you? What are your current offerings? And then we'll transition into that meditation.
Sure. Okay, cool. So the website is attachmentrepair.com. And probably the best thing to do is get onto the newsletter. We don't like probably one email a month is max that we send out. And we just send an email out when we have a new offering. The current offering that is about to start is a course called, I think, Developing the Healthy Adult. And we're just going to work on, most of the courses are about kind of actually receiving love and repairing our attachment conditioning. This course is more about developing the ability, like the sense of self-agency, self-definition, like knowing who you are, knowing what your opinions are, feeling that they matter, self-esteem. We're going to also work on metacognitive skills, like being able to hold your mind in mind, hold other people's mind in mind. Also, more kind of working on being that secure partner or secure person to your attachment figures. So it's kind of like almost like the inverse of the usual work. The usual work is like getting kind of receiving all this, but now we're going to be it and then give it to others in this course. And then there's also some digital products of old retreats and courses on there. But yeah, so sign up for the newsletter. That's the best thing to do. And then you'll get all the updates.
I confirm that the emails are not overbearing. It's excellent. It's just the right amount. And it's good to see what's coming out from you. So thank you for that. Let's enjoy a meditation. Thank you so much for offering to do this with us. And of course, letting our listeners know that there are more meditations available both on apps. What is it?
On Insight Timer. I'm on Insight Timer. And then, I should have mentioned this earlier, but on attachmentrepair.com, there's a meditation library with 80 meditations that is totally freely available. So
that's a fantastic resource. So go there to experience more. And then remind us, what was the meditation you were going to help us with today?
It came up kind of conversationally. It's like, I think it was like maybe part of the, how do we stay motivated? So what I thought to do is kind of like guide us through a meditation where we get a better sense as to what secure attachment would look like in our own lives. And then ballpark, like what kind of time do you have? Like, I'm thinking somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes. Does that work?
I think that's perfect.
Great. Yeah. So, all right. So let's just go ahead and come into a meditation posture. So we start by pushing the crown of the head up towards the ceiling. This gently tucks the chin. And roll the shoulders back and down just a bit. No straining. The chest comes up and out also just a bit. Now we'll do a little bit of breath work. Go ahead and inhale super deep. Retain the breath below the navel. And now exhale slowly, extending the length of the exhale. And now once again, super deep breath in. Retain the breath. And then once again, exhale, extending the length of the exhale. And now one last time, super deep breath in. Retain the breath below the navel. And now exhale. Okay, so what we'll do in this meditation is first kind of investigate our own attachment conditioning, how well we connect with others, and also how good at exploring we are, how much we know ourselves, etc. And then we'll imagine what it would be like to just be a little bit more healed, more fluent, more at ease, better developed in all those areas towards the end of the meditation. So now ask yourself, like, what are you like in relationship? What is your subjective experience of relationship, close relationship? Is there fear of abandonment? Is there mistrust? Is there the sense, oh, maybe there's something wrong with me? Maybe a sense of not being able to expect that anyone attuned to you or really be there for you, guide you. Maybe there's a sense of kind of social isolation, not being part of the group. And also maybe not, hopefully not. Also, is there this sense that, like, oh, I need to kind of, I can't set a healthy boundary. I can't really ask for what I want. I have to put all this pressure on myself. So is there any of that? And actually, if you want, you can write down any little piece of that we just went over that really resonated. This is helpful kind of diagnostically in terms of what you need to work on. Either write that down or reflect on it silently. We'll take a minute with this. Okay, good. And now know that this can change. Know that there can be greater ease, greater fluency with relationships, etc. So now let's imagine that. So now imagine yourself connecting with others, but not having any kind of sense of shame, sense that there's something wrong with you. Imagine that right now. Imagine the absence of any fear around abandonment. And now let's positively imagine many good qualities. See yourself connecting deeply with others. There's this smile that's kind of arising in the body, filling up the body, as you imagine connecting with others. You know and expect that others will delight in you. So go ahead and see that. You are such a delight to others. And you can see that in the scene right now. Also notice how you reciprocate. You delight in them. I've heard it said that the currency of secure attachment is delight. Notice how fulfilling that is, and now feel that in the body. That's right. And also see yourself attuning with others. See yourself really understanding others. There's this quality of openness, understanding, compassion. You really understand what others have been through. Also see yourself at total ease with soothing others. And now see others reciprocating. See how these people that you're close with, they get you. They know what you've gone through. Also see how they're happy to soothe you, take care of you when you need it. And also now feel this in the body. This is a real felt sense. That's right. Also notice how there's actually like an entrainment, a synchronization of mental and physical states between you and your loved ones, the people that you're close with. All these shared experiences. And that this reinforces a sense of belonging and connectedness. Now feel into that now. And also notice how you still have a separate self. You're not enmeshed with these people, but there is connection. And there's a sense of complete ease around it. Really feel that in the body. Relationship is so reliable. There's so much trust. And now, kind of step back from this meditation for a moment. Really kind of take a broad view of this. See how well supported you are. See how like kind of at ease with relationships you are. And now as you're reflecting on that, turn the mind towards your explorations, towards the things that you want to do with your life. What's important to you? And now notice how, as you kind of contemplate your explorations, they all seem so much more accessible and real to you because you have all this support. Notice that for a moment. This is actually a bit of psychoeducation. The more we feel supported by others, the more we feel connected, the easier it is to go about our explorations. Now see that and see how that's true in your own life right now. Okay, good. Now, for just a minute, make a plan around what it is that you want to go after. What's important to you? Go ahead and make that plan now. Then notice how your plan is really good. It's really well thought out. There's this quality of creativity in your plan. It's wonderful. And now see yourself implementing the plan. And once again, notice how it's so much easier to execute your plan given all the support. That's right. Really feel into that. That's right. Keep going. You keep implementing your plan. And there might be little problems. And when you're faced with a little problem, you just reassess. You figure out a alternative solution to circumvent the problem. Then off you go, and it's going well once again. Okay, good. And now imagine that you come to kind of the fruition of your plan. You've achieved your goal here. And then see all these other attachment figures in your life. You can imagine the perfect nurturers all seeing this and being happy for you, celebrating with you. And now really take that in. Get the sense that you can go after what you want. Okay, good. And now make a deep, deep impression of this. Now, just for 30 seconds, look back over this meditation. What did you learn? What were the insights? What are the take-home messages here? Just seeing all of this clearly. Okay, good. Wrapping that up. Now I'll count from 5 to 1. When I get to 1, you'll be awake and present in the room, settled in the experience. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Awake and present in the room, settled in the experience. Okay.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Cedric. It was a delight to get to hear your story and to participate with you in some of the work you do.
Sure.
Encourage our listeners to go and find your work. Yep. And we look forward to hearing about your research study that you're including here. That's exciting that you added that variable into the work you're doing. So wish you the best in your endeavors as you continue to share this unique combination of modalities with people.
Yeah, sure. It was my pleasure. I had a good time.
From our hearts to yours, thank you for joining us today on this episode of the Journey of Wholeness podcast. We are so grateful for you. We believe in you. If you'd love more of this great content, please consider subscribing. We'd love to support you even further by you joining our Facebook group community called The Journey of Wholeness, where we talk about principles to help empower and transform your life along your journey of wholeness. You can find out more details at thejourneyofwholeness.com.